Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
We continue our review of Budget 2021. So Budget 2021's focus point was to help businesses in Singapore. The people, on the other hand, have not been forgotten.
Absolutely. Deputy Prime Minister Heng Swee Keat on Tuesday announcing measures to strengthen the social compact and support Singaporeans who've been more badly affected by the COVID-19 pandemic.
So DPM Heng talked about how in order to strengthen our social compact, we got to work harder to address the challenges faced by the more vulnerable members of our society. He also highlighted lower wage workers, lower income families, children with special needs. You know, all these are groups that need more support.
And to encourage charitable giving and corporate volunteerism, the Singapore government will extend tax deductions and a number of initiatives to assist charities as they face new challenges due to COVID-19.
So how will Singaporeans benefit from these new measures? We're going to find out more from Pauline Tay Strawn, Professor of Sociology Practice, Dean of Students and Director of the Centre for Research on Successful Ageing, Singapore Management University. Prof, good morning. How are you?
Good morning and thank you for having me.
You were also an NMP from the years 2009 to 2012. Your colleague is a good friend of ours, Prof Eugene. From SMU.
Yeah.
We just had him here in the studio.
Good.
So let's talk about the social compact, because all of this week we've been talking a lot about businesses, but at the end of the day, it all boils down to people. There were some parts of the community that were hit very hard during the pandemic. So while things are still uncertain, why is there this need for Singapore to strengthen that social compact, as DPM Heng referred to it?
Well, I think that we have matured as a society to go beyond just looking at economic well-being, right? You would notice that in recent years, government has been talking about holistic well-being of Singaporeans. This, you know, the concurrent developments in our demographic shifts, right, with smaller family size and an aging population, gives rise to the conclusion that individual and family efforts are just not enough, right, to keep everybody together as we move as a nation. So government then in this social compact has to be in a solid partnership with the community to step up and together protect the well-being of all Singaporeans. This pretty much is in line with our next phase of nation building, where we put a lot more effort in nurturing active stakeholders in the community so that we can have a sense of ownership, you know, that this is our community, our country, and we look after each other.
Very interesting names were used, and very significant ones like resilience, unity. These were names of the various budgets that were released last year. Prof, do you think that last year's budget or budgets have helped Singaporeans realize this need to address the social compact?
Well, certainly. I think that there will be few who disagree with me when I say that the last year has been so challenging with the global disruption. And many of us were very grateful that we rode out that year in Singapore, right? I think without reservation, you know, Singapore was able to, first of all, I think the measures rolled out protect businesses and therefore protect jobs, right? Protected jobs. And of course, with the four budgets that were rolled out last year, it also formed a cushion, right? For many, many Singaporeans, we fell, but you know, the landing was somewhat, you know, protected and mitigated, right, by all the helplines that were rolled out. And of course, the names that were four, so people like you and I have to keep reading, right, to remember unity, resilience, solidarity, fortitude. But these names are important because I think it draws the collective consciousness, right, that if there's not money handing out, that would be, you know, in a way, a waste opportunity, right, to leverage on the significance of these helplines and what they are targeted for. So, you know, in tandem, right, budgets are not just about, you know, signing a check and giving out money. I think very important is the framing of where the resources are targeted towards and how we can then leverage the resources. How do we make that intervention, you know, magnify the intervention so that we can gain more from it?
Yeah, I love what you say about this collective consciousness and putting, you know, intention behind the measures. However, I wanted to ask about the fact that last year was a year where, you know, we faced a pandemic. We still do. We're still dealing with it. In a situation like that, your weak spots become very visible. Do you feel that all of those budgets actually did enough to fill the gap? And what do you think of budget 2021? Is it going far enough with that?
So I think that last year, the budgets were in two phases, right? The first phase was, it was more general, broad-based, and it was like a big giant hug, you know, to gather the flock, right, to make sure that all of us are you know, protected and that government knows that, you know, we need strong leadership. So that $600 that went out to every Singaporean, for example, was really much appreciated. And it was amazing when we saw that those who didn't need the money contributed, you know, towards charities, right? So that was amazing. So I think that you're right. The pandemic had made the weak weaker, and it had rendered visible, you know, in the gaps that many of us didn't even see. You know, for example, our low-wage workers, but the sectors that we thought would never, you know, be affected, you know, like tourism, aviation, suddenly fell right through this big, you know, giant, you know, black hole that was created by the pandemic. So I believe that subsequent budgets, that's why the four phases of the budgets I thought was very, you know, innovative, because instead of just one lump sum that went out, government was able to, at each intervention, the targets, it became a more targeted approach, right? Because as new gaps emerged and new inequalities are highlighted, then, you know, the focus of aid was shifted to those sectors. So I think that overall, I think it is part of that making that dollar stretch. Right, where you don't just throw money out where, you know, just for the sake of showing that government is doing its part, but rather, you know, have a very evidence-based approach to where our limited resources should go. And of course, moving forward, we are not, you know, the pandemic is still with us, right? 2021, we are, you know, many of us are guardedly optimistic, but we know, you know, that it's going to be another long year, particularly for those who are in specific industries, right? So I see budget 2021 extending that track of the intervention, right? So we see certain, now the industries are highlighted, the job support schemes are, you know, fine-tuned and tailored to, I think, reach out to those, to sectors where help is still needed, and sectors that have recovered, you know, help is pulled back. And this targeted approach, I think, will help us, I hope, you know, survive this pandemic without dipping too much into our reserves again, right?
But what does that say, you know, in terms of targeted approach or a phased approach, when we're looking at things like the Workfare Income Supplement Scheme, Workfare Skills Support Scheme, Progressive Wage Model, which what seems to be an eternal debate between that and minimum wage? The government has said it's making good progress, but what's your opinion? Does this need to be expanded to more sectors? Does it need to be pushed forward because the pandemic the wheels on that isn't slowing down as fast as we hope it would?
So I'm a sociologist, right? I'm not an economist, so I actually had to, you know, do a lot of reading up for your interview here. But the four schemes that have been highlighted, WIS, WSS, in particular, right? I think so the debate between, you know, these targeted approaches and a broad-based minimum wage is ongoing, right? And there are very intelligent economists arguing for both sides. However, from my perspective, and when I interview, you know, do qualitative interviews with Singaporeans who benefit from these schemes, right? I think workfare is a very intelligent scheme because it is not charity, right? It is the philanthropy, right? Because it is a scheme that encourages you to participate in paid work. Because paid work is not just about earning a wage. It is about, you know, a whole host of, you know, impact, positive impacts, like, you know, growing self-esteem, a sense of purpose, and you know, and feeling that you are part of, you know, contributing to the economy, right? So many older Singaporeans, for example, I speak with, were very, very happy with workfare, and it encouraged them to continue to, you know, be productive because they have a job, then they can benefit from workfare. And with workfare, they take home, you know, a fair salary that allows them to, you know, have, you know, the standard of living, you know, that they appreciated, and also allow them to save a little bit. And of course, with skills upgrading, that is the key word now, especially now with pandemic, you know, disrupting everything that we had accepted as norm. And now we are all waiting, you know, to see what the new norm post-COVID would look like and where, you know, which industries, you know, will rise, you know, to meet the challenges and which industries will have to be retired. Right. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, we are looking at people, right? People who are stuck in industries that may be sunset industries. In fact, for some, there isn't even time for the sun to set, right? Suddenly, yeah, it was just darkness. And yeah, retraining is not so easy. You know, it's not easy to place somebody in a factory, you know, producing parts for product A, and then now ask them to go and be, you know, frontline service staff for another industry. That training process is, we have to ingrain it in part and parcel, right, of our, you know, position in our various roles in the economy. So WSS, I think, puts in place this scheme, right? It normalizes training and upskilling. And I think together with WIS, it forms, in my opinion, forms a very strong safety net for workers who are, you know, in the lower wage sector.
Countering, and of course, the social anxiety we face in a recession.
That's right, precisely. And of course, you know, I like work care a lot, right? Because it goes beyond just remuneration, which is important. Work care looks at, you know, provision of safe and conducive work environment. We spend, you know, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, most of us, if we're lucky, right, in the workplace. And we seldom think about, you know, that space that, you know, we have to spend most of our daylight hours at. I think work care forces us to look at the welfare of all our employees, right? To, you know, force us to think about, you know, whether they have safe spaces to rest, whether they can look forward to going to work, right, to a conducive environment.
Wow, so much food for thought here. We're now going to move into just talking about the senior worker early adopter grant and the part-time re-employment grant. That's going to be increased by more than $200 million. So this supports companies to move earlier to raise their retirement and re-employment ages. I'm finding this subject about senior workers fascinating. And from your point of view as a sociologist, I want to understand. So you had mentioned earlier, you know, the benefits of higher self-esteem gain from being in the world of work, upskilling, all of these sorts of things. But I just want to play devil's advocate here a little bit. I think of someone who's in their senior years and I think, wouldn't you want to retire? Wouldn't you want to feel that I have a, you know, a healthy enough pension, a strong enough base in my life that I can retire? What's wrong with that idea? Why this encouragement to make sure that people are still working older?
Yeah. So there's two tenets to this argument, right? The first, of course, is that I mean, first and foremost, I think what we are looking for really is options, right? Where if you choose to retire, you have that option to retire, and if you choose to continue working, or if you have to continue working, then you can, you know, continue working. I think that is the principle behind, I think, these nudges, right?
Right.
However, I think fundamentally for a resource-scarce place like Singapore, where, you know, when we say we are an aging population, we're aging because there isn't enough young people, because, you know, there is sustained, you know, ultra-low fertility since, you know, 1990s, late 1980s, right? And and unless we continue to tap on surplus labor from the region, Singapore wouldn't have enough, right, to go into the workforce to sustain our economy. So therefore, that's one, right? We don't have enough in terms of manpower resources. We are a shrinking population. I don't see the trend shifting at any time in the future, right? Because, you know, families now tend to be smaller. While we do encourage and we continue to encourage young Singaporeans to get married and form families, we know that there are, you know, other life goals, you know, that they are chasing as well. Mm. So it is what it is. And then, of course, the second important fact is that we may, you know, age is a very interesting construct. When I was growing up, 55 was old, right? But now that I'm, you know, 55, you know, plus 1 or 2 years, I don't see myself as old, right? I keep telling my friends, I say, we are the new norm, right? Okay, so therein lies, you know, this important realization that with better nutrition, public health, and pro-health initiatives, and Singapore has been very successful in this area, we are living longer, and we are also trying very hard to expand health span. That means the time that, you know, we are able to, you know, spend in good health, right, post-retirement. So given that, you know, the 55 of today are going to be, you know, healthy, resourceful, and are able to, you know, fully contribute, right, to the economy, you don't want to waste this pool of important, significant labor, right? Mm. So it is about nudging businesses to have to agitate a cultural shift and reorientate our appreciation of age and what it symbolizes. So when I look at a 55-year-old right now, I don't see an old person who is heading for retirement. In fact, I see somebody who is at the peak of their career because of all their life experiences, right? And their experiences, you know, at the workplace, facing challenges and so forth. And these precisely are the people that you want to tap on as we navigate through the next, you know, pandemic, the next, you know, set of, you know, global challenges that we have to face, right?
Yep, 50 is the new 30, okay? We are running out of time, so we're going to have to try and keep this last one short. And I want to point this out because it's quite important. While this data may be a little bit out of date, according to KK Hospital and NUH, from 2010 to 2014, there was a 76% increase in the number of children diagnosed with developmental delays, learning difficulties, autism, special needs, and whatnot. And the government has come out to say that they want to pilot an inclusive support program. Could I very quickly get your thoughts on this, paying special attention to this group of children and how much it needs to be expanded on?
I think that it is very important that we focus on this group of Singaporeans because we can only grow strong as the last person, you know, in the group, right? So therefore, you know, moving forward, it is critical that we are able to ensure that all of us, you know, grow together and you know, mature together, right, as an economy. So I think that this call from the budget, again, is a nudge and it's an alert, right, that as we move forward, we must now agree that maybe some of us need to run, you know, a little bit slower so that the rest of us can keep up, right? This is about growing nation. And for a small country like Singapore, there's no point that, you know, 10% wastes off and leaves the other, you know, the last 10% behind, right?
So true.
But the second important point, of course, is that learn to look beyond the disabilities, right? Just because a person has some disabilities doesn't mean that there is no value, right, to their contribution to our community. So it's like how we learn to receive an aging population. Look beyond the disabilities, look beyond the labeling, the stigma, and look at the value proposition.
Okay. We've been speaking with Pauline Tay Strawn, Professor of Sociology Practice, Dean of Students and Director of the Centre for Research on Successful Aging, Singapore Management University. Prof, really appreciate your time. Take care and stay safe.
Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.